Aho, aho, Mano Nikon, Mano Wabin. This is Sam. I'm here with Josh, and we're here to discuss many of the things going on around the nation.
Sam, that's right. We're going to be talking about Potawatomi stuff, First Nation stuff, stories, legends, history, great chiefs. My favorite topic is the War of 1812. And we'll go through all these things because, you know, me and Sam got this idea about doing the podcast through Facebook. Me and him have been rambling on back and forth for like 3 or 4 years. I was like, dude, our messenger could be a podcast. He's like, yeah, you're right, man. Yeah. And so, but with COVID, we're having to do everything a little bit separately. We're in different towns, so just bear with us right now. But we're going to get this very first one started. And I think Sam's got an exciting story. Sam is a fortitude of stories. You know, he's a great storyteller. Man of infinite knowledge, right? So Sam, why don't you go ahead and light up this podcast?
I suppose the reason that this story came to me was because of a conversation that I had had in 2013 at the Potawatomi Gathering in Dowagiac, Michigan. The Pokagon Band was hosting that year. My friend Randy and I were walking around and we came across Billy Daniels. Billy Daniels is an elder. He's a fluent language speaker, one of the best as far as just speaking goes. And he's also a good guy. He's got some good stories. And so he pulled us to the side where he was and asked us if we knew who the creator's favorite animal was. And of course, we didn't. I guess we both kind of thought it was a joke and we didn't take a guess. Billy told us pretty quickly, he said that it was the dog. And of course, we kind of thought this was odd because usually people think that, like, human beings are the creator's favorite, or they don't think that we're animals or something. Anyway, Mr. Daniels told us this story. He said that, you know that the dog is the creator's favorite because every morning, the first thing it does when it gets up is it stretches and bows to God. And every time that you hit your dog, he looks up at the sky and barks. And that whenever you pass on, the next place you go to, you'll be graded by those marks from the dog. I don't know if anybody else has ever heard the story of, like, the Rainbow Bridge that says that our dogs pass, they don't live as long as humans, because our dogs will be what comes to find us in the spirit world. And so they have to pass before us. So they'll be there waiting for us. Randy and I had a conversation about this once we got back to Oklahoma. Mainly, we didn't know why Billy had decided to tell us this story. It seemed out of place. We didn't know why he had decided to tell us that story. We weren't walking a dog, and we didn't have on dog shirts. But Billy had chosen to tell that story to us. And so a lot of times with elders, we do kind of look into, I wonder why they told me this, or I wonder, you know, like, what did they have envisioned that I might get out of this? And because it also didn't seem like it was just a joke. It did have an element of humor with it, but Billy didn't see us smacking our dogs around and see them looking up at the sky and barking. So it just left us with questions. And I know I still bring it up. Here it is 7 years later, and I'm still talking about this story. I'm sure Randy still remembers it. But nevertheless, it's a good story. I don't know if it was in 2013 in the winter that followed that gathering, or if it was in 2012, but the Prairie Band had a winter storytelling event up in Mayetta. We went up there to that, and a young man on the Prairie Band language team at the time, I want to say his name was Colton, but I'm probably wrong. Anyway, he was a cool kid, and he got up there and he told a story about the time that the dogs wanted to have a council meeting. The people decided to let them because they weren't using the council house. And so the dogs went there and they hung all their tails up on the fence outside the council house. And they went in and they had their meeting and they talked about what dogs talk about. And then whenever they left, the dogs had all forgotten which tail was theirs. And so they all just grabbed a tail and put it on and left. But that's why dogs go around sniffing each other's tails, because they are looking for their own. And now that's a funny story, but it has another element to it. A dog's tail could be that thing behind him that wags, but a dog's tail could also be that dog's individual story. And it could also be the dogs as a collective, their story. And so they've lost their story because they tried to act like people. And now they're going around looking for their tail because they've lost it. The more you look into things like world history, you may find that the dog once held a higher position in the eyes of man. And of course, that seems odd because we think of the dog as man's best friend. However, at one time, man was a better friend to the dog.
A lot of different yoga poses do come from animals, the upward dog, the downward dog, and it's interesting how they tie into the story, you know, because the way the stretch and I do try some yoga, a little Tai Chi, but whenever you're doing the upward dog and downward dog, I never thought of it as a way of praying, I guess, but there's a lot of sutras that involve it, and it just makes me stop and contemplate and think. Every morning, you know, I wake up, we all do it, we hit that alarm clock, hit that snooze 5 or 6 times, right? We never give ourselves that time to stop, pause, stretch. Look up to the great Lord and the Creator and just say, hey, man, thanks for making today a good day. Wouldn't you agree, Sam?
I totally recognize the problem that you're talking about there. People don't seem to have the consideration for their morning routine that puts them in a good pattern for the rest of the day. I myself don't have the alarm problem with hitting the snooze. If I set an alarm, I'll wake up 5 minutes before that thing goes off. It's like I stress about it the whole time sleeping. However, once I am up, I don't take the time to set myself out a proper tone for the rest of the day. A lot of times I'll just smoke a couple cigarettes, drink a soda pop, skip breakfast, don't do any exercise, get in my truck, and head to work. Aho, aho, Mano Nikon, Mano Wabin. This is Sam. I'm here with Josh. And what I'd like to talk about today are books. So, Josh, you got any favorite books?
That is a great question, Sam. And actually, I do. Got a little book by a man named Basil Johnson called Ojibwe Heritage. I'm sitting here right now with it in front of me, and I'd like to share a few excerpts of it for the people that haven't read the book. And this book is, you know, it's mostly Anishinaabe. So, first of all, it's, we'll start off with the Vision of Kitchiminitu. Creation. Young and old asked, who gave to me the breath of life, my frame of flesh? Who gave to me the beat of heart, my vision to behold? Who? One to rose the gift of shade of beauty and grace of form. One to pine the gift of mystery of growth, the power to heal. When? How to bear the gift of sense of time, a place of wintering, How to eagle came the gift of glance of love, the flash of rage. How? Who gave the sun his light to burn, his path to tread? Who gave the to earth her greening bounty, cycles of her being? Who? Who gave to us the gifts we do not own, but borrow and pass on? Who made us one? Who set the path of cells? Who carved the land of peace? Who? As the young asked, the old men and old women thought about these matters. They gave their answers and explanations in the form of stories, songs, prayers, rituals, and ceremonies. Kichi Manitou, which is also the Great Spirit, and see if this sounds familiar to anything else you've ever heard, beheld a vision. In his dream, he saw a vast sky filled with stars, sun, moon, and earth. He saw an earth made of mountains and valleys, islands, lakes, plains, and forests. He saw trees and flowers, grass and vegetables. He saw walking, flying, swimming, and crawling beings. He witnessed the birth, growth, and end of things. At the same time, he saw that other things live on, and amidst change, there is constancy. Kichi Manitou heard songs, wailings, stories. He touched wind and rain. He felt love, hate, fear, courage, joy, and sadness. Kichi Manitou meditated to understand his vision. In his wisdom, Kichi Manitou understood that his vision had to be fulfilled. Kichi Manitou was to bring into being and existence what he had seen, heard, or felt. Out of nothing, he made rock, water, fire, and wind. Into each one, he breathed the breath of life. On each, he bestowed with his breath a different essence of nature. Each substance had its own power, which became its soul spirit. From these four substances, Kichi Manitou created the physical world of sun, stars, moon, and earth. Now, does that sound a little bit familiar? I mean, this is really a great book. And that's just like on the first couple pages. So if you're very curious about Anishinaabe, Ojibwa, just stuff from earlier days, this is definitely a book to put on your bucket list. Find a couple more things here. Like I said, it's a very deep book. It's full of... I'll go over the chapters real quick just to give you an idea. There's also tons of drawings and illustrations, and it points out different stuff off the birch bark. So the first I read was part of the vision of Kichi Manitou. It also talks about Father, Son, and Mother Earth. It talks about the nature of planets, nature of animals, man's world, the midway wind, the path without end, the path of souls, the four hills of life, the vision. There's a chapter on ceremonies, songs, and dances. And finally ends with the incorporeal world, which is 149, right? There's something interesting. And I'll just, basically it talks about Kichi Manitou, it talks about Father, Son, Nokomis, which is grandmother, the Thunderers, Pingishmook, Winona, who's the mother of Nana Bush, or Nana Bozo. There's the Mudjikwas, Papikois, Chibiabos, that's Nana Bush's brother. Nana Bush, which is, like I said, Nana Bozo. He was a paradox. On one hand, he was a supernatural being possessing supernatural powers. On the other hand, he was the son of a mortal woman subject to the need to learn. Sounds familiar once again. He was sent to the world to teach the Anishinaabe, to help the weak, to heal the sick. He could be human in nature, in essence, was a spirit. There's talks about the four spirits, or the four guardians, I'm sorry. And just keeps going on and on. You know, and to kind of tie this all back together, I was telling Sam a while back when I first read this book. You know, Sam and I are both like big dog fans, right? And there's actually a festival of the dogs, right? Listen to this one. There are two forms of dog festivals. One was for warriors. The other was for people in general. In the first, the purpose was to test, and by frequent testing, to uphold the courage of warriors. In the second, the people were reminded of famine and survival through dance. They relived adversity and reenacted their endurance. At the same time, the dance prefigured future famines and petitioned for courage and endurance. You know, that's all I'm going to say on that book right there. There's so much And you probably need to just re-listen and take a pen and paper on everything that I just went over, right? In the future, we're talking about books. I know we're going to go over Seven Grandfathers. We're going to go over the Mission Omis. And Sam, I'm going to turn this back over to you. Why don't you tell us about a couple of your books?
One of the books I always like to discuss whenever these type questions come up is actually two books, but the first one is called Fool's Crow, and it was written by Thomas Males about the life of Frank Fool's Crow, the ceremonial and spiritual leader for the Lakota Nation up until, I guess, about the late 80s. And then the second book is called Fool's Crow, Wisdom and Power, and it was published after Fool's Crow's passing. He didn't want to put that book out during his lifetime, and if you read the first one, you'll kind of understand why he didn't want to do that, and if you read the whole thing, you'll kind of see that he had good reason for not wanting to put that out during his lifetime. But the second book, he does a great job of showing us why humanity can do so many good things for life and existence. And if we connect to that and do that, then we just basically, he calls it putting out baskets of love, is what he calls it. But he says that an empty basket will always come back to you, and it's just his job to fill it with love. And so, more or less, he teaches us how we can do that, but it's not as easy as just finding an empty basket. It's a great book. They're both great books. You need to read them both if you're going to read either of them.
That reminds me of a quote by Crowfoot. What is life? It is a flash of a firefly in the night. It is a breath of buffalo in the wintertime. It is as a little shadow that runs across the grass and loses itself in the sunset.
Oh, that's a quality quote from Crowfoot. The what is life quote. Crowfoot decides it's a shadow that loses itself among the grass as the sun sets. I suppose it has to do with perspective. That shadow could find itself to be the immenseness of the whole world once the sun sets. Do shadows disappear at night? Or do they just disappear when there's all light? Those are topics we probably won't discuss today.
Miigwech, thanks for joining us for the show. If you have anything that you want to see us on future episodes, just hit us up on our Gmail at ahominonikan@gmail.com. ahominonikan@gmail.com. One more time. ahominonikan@gmail.com. Or feel free, we'll soon have a Facebook page up. Or just hit me or Sam up in the group or anywhere else on social media that you see us floating around. Until then, we bid you farewell.